Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Gimel and Sota. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is on the Zeichen Nishmat Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. Second day of the Masechta. Let's review what we saw yesterday. Two-step process to making a woman a Sota. Yesterday, we first started off with a very fundamental point that there really are two different types of Sota. There's a Sota Suffix, Sota Vadai. Sota Suffix is the one that we more classically think about when we think about Sota, where we don't know what happened in the room. She secluded herself with a man, but we don't know what happens. But, kept pounding yesterday, and I'll just repeat again today, her status changes. She's married, but she's no longer materis to her husband. Once she goes through the formal process of Kino and Stira, so at that point in time she's a sota. She has a status now of being a sota. She's usher to her husband. Obviously, the next step in the process is going to be that she's going to have to drink the mesota. Until she drinks the mesota, she can never be permitted again to her husband. In fact, the Gemara yesterday, the very tail end of yesterday's daf, pointed out that nowadays, where we don't have a base of mikdash and we don't have the mesota, so now you put a woman into a position of bikinu and stira, so that's going to be inextricable. She will be stuck there forever. The Gemara noted at the end of yesterday's daf. A sota vadai is where a woman was not only committing adultery, but she was seen committing adultery. I mean, the actual act of adultery was viewed by two witnesses. So that's a sota vadai. That's something where that's not where the mesota is going to come into play. She's also to her husband. She's going to have to get a divorce. She's going to forfeit her ksuva. Okay, that's we will be focusing in this mesechta much more about the sota suffix rather than the sota vadai. Yesterday, we talked about the formality of Kino and Stira. There are two parts to the process of a woman becoming a sota, and one is a warning issued by the husband. The second is stira. She secludes herself with a man after having received the warning not to be with that particular man. This process of kinu and stira is mentioned in the Torah. The order in the Torah is a little out of sync, but we're going to discuss that later this morning. That's coming up in today's daf. But kinu and stira, first a warning and then seclusion. How many witnesses do you need for kinu? How many witnesses do you need for stira? So that was machlokas we saw yesterday in the Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah is of the opinion that for a kinu, you need two witnesses. The warning issued by the husband has to be done in front of two witnesses. And stira can be done even in front of one witness and, according to Rabbi Eliezer of our Mishnah, even in front of the husband himself. The husband himself, if he steps forward and says, I saw my wife seclude herself with that man after having issued a formal warning, so then she is now gone through step two of stira, and now that's it. She now has the status of being a sota. She no longer is permitted to her husband until they go to the Beis Mikdash and find out what happened by drinking the mesota. Rabbi Yoshua in the Mishnah, on the other hand, is of the opinion that for both kinu and for stira, you need two witnesses. I need a pair of witnesses for the kinu, I need a pair of witnesses for the stira, otherwise her status does not change. That is the opinion of Rabbi Yoshua in the Mishnah. Yesterday, on Beis Amud Beis, we noted that according to Rabbi Eliezer, there actually are two versions of Rabbi Eliezer. One is the one just given to us in the Mishnah, which I just went over, and the other position is offered by Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda in yesterday's daf told us that according to Rabbi Eliezer, it is two and one, but it's not two and one, it's rather one and two. One witness for the kinui, two witnesses for the stira. And again, when we say one witness for the kinu, it could be the husband himself. The husband can issue a warning. According to our second version of Rabbi Eliezer, that's a warning, that's now officially a warning. And then the stira, and then the seclusion has to be done in front of two witnesses. And that's where the Gemara got to the point yesterday by noting, according to this version of Rabbi Eliezer, now in terms of what the halacha is, as I mentioned yesterday, the Rambam follows like Rabbi Yoshua. But the Gemara noted yesterday, if you hold like Rabbi Eliezer, and specifically if you hold like the Bryce's version of Rabbi Eliezer, so now every time the husband says to his wife, hey, don't be with that man, right? I'm suspicious of you and that man. I don't want you to be with that man. I don't want you talking with that man. So now the husband has issued an official warning, according to Rabbi Eliezer's version of the Bryce. According to the Bryce's version of Rabbi Eliezer. Thank you. And that means then that she's already now step one in the sota process. And all you now need is two witnesses to say that they secluded. Now she's at step two. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. We don't have Mesota. So the Gemara points out that if we held like Rabbi Eliezer of the Braisa, man's got to be very careful. Man should never issue a warning to his wife for fear that for fear that we may hold like Rabbi Eliezer, and now you've already gotten to step one of the of the sota process.
Well, that's a way to say from the ksuba.
Okay. could be. We are now in those 5 good minutes. We just basically reviewed yesterday's daf. Let us continue with today's daf. We are on the bottom of Beis Amud Beis, and we're starting today with the words Amar Reish Lakish. Amar Reish Lakish, it's 5 lines from the bottom. The Gemara continues, Malashon Kinui Davar Hamato Kino Beino Levein Acherim. So what is Kinui? Meaning the Torah uses that word. We've been using that word all yesterday. We're going to continue that word today. Now we know what it is. It is a warning issued by the husband to his wife. That we know. But what does the word mean? What's the etymology of the word kina? So the Gemara is going to offer a couple of explanations. One explanation is davar hamato kina beina levein acherim. It's going to promote anger and jealousy between her and her friends. Between her and her friends. How did Reish Lakish arrive at that conclusion? Because Reish Lakish is of the opinion that kinu can be done just by himself. Meaning Reish Lakish is adopting the Rebbe Eliezer opinion. And that means that he himself can provide the kinui. He can now warn her. So now she's been issued an official warning. Because again, according to Rabbi Eliezer, the husband himself has the ability to give an official warning. And now the kulei amalei yad dekanila. And now what about the rest of the world? So because according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's he and only he that can issue the warning. Well, he could do it in front of another witness. But he and only he can issue the warning. So now it comes out that she was warned and nobody else knows about it. And the Gemara says, Va'amre. And what are people going to say? Mai dekama dekabadla. What's happening with her? Like she's not socializing, she's not going out, she's not spending time with other people. What's wrong? They don't know that she was issued an official warning, and now she's scared, and she's not going out. And so now that she is rejecting any type of social interaction and social engagement, so now people are basically saying, I don't know what's going on with her, but you know what? She doesn't want in, we want her out. And it's going to create fight between her and other people. That's Reish Lakish's understanding of the word kina. It creates anger and jealousy, but interestingly, between her and the outside world. Rabbi Yemar bar Shama Mishmeh Dabai Amar Davar Amata Kina Beino Leveina. According to Abaye, it is same meaning, but the fighting that's going to be created is between her and her husband. Why? Because he's of the opinion that kinui has to be done with 2 witnesses. Now here, he could go like either Rabbi Eliezer of the Mishnah or like Rabbi Yeshua of the Mishnah. We have a choice. But however he rules halachically, the kinui has to be done in front of 2 witnesses. So that means that once 2 witnesses know that she was warned, that means everybody knows that she was warned. This point's interesting because, first of all, even though the 2 witnesses know about it, but they shouldn't. I don't know if they have a. Yeah, exactly. They shouldn't broadcast that information to other people. And generally speaking, in halacha, when we talk about word of mouth, when 3 people know something, so then we assume everybody knows about it. But if 2 people know about something, the Gemara here is making an assumption that everyone knows about it as well. Anyway, so the kuli amiyad.
The husband would be one of the third.
Okay. I guess. Right. Right. No, that's a good point. Right. It's the 2 witnesses and him. No. Good. Good. The kuli amay is a dekadnila. The ihu das lemavi kina bahada. And now that the whole world knows that he issued her a warning, so now that creates, unfortunately, it's going to promote more fighting between him and her, husband and wife. So, okay, so we have now 2 pshatim in between Abai and Reish Lakish, but really the common denominator is that the word kina means arguing, fighting, quarreling, jealousy, like a whole list of bad things that's going to come out from that warning. And the only real distinction between them is it going to be between her and the outside world, or is it going to be between her and her husband? But it's bad. Kina's bad. So if kina's bad, what does that mean? Should the husband issue a warning? No, he shouldn't. Alma Kasavre, the Gemara says, they are both of the opinion, both Reish Lakish and Abaye, that Asolakanos, that a husband should not be issuing a warning. Meaning, we mentioned this yesterday, it's coming up again today, that even though by right a husband has the ability to warn, but he shouldn't. Meaning there's a mitzvah and there's a hashkafa. The mitzvah is it's an avenue. You could go down that avenue. The hashkafa is but don't go down that avenue. Nothing good is going to come out of it. It's going to just promote fighting. And the Torah affords you an opportunity to do so, but don't do it. Now, the Gemara is assuming that there's another side, and that somebody's of the opinion that a husband should issue a warning to his wife. Now, if you assume that that's true, so what do you do with the word kina? Because kina means anger and jealousy, and primarily jealousy, but kina is a bad thing. And if kin is a bad thing, can't imagine that the Torah would want that. So if you are of the opinion, it's an interesting starting point for the discussion. If you are of the opinion that issuing a warning is permissible, what do you do with the actual word kinah? So So to that the Gemara says, you know what kinu is? Kinu just simply means a warning. A warning issued with no negative connotation. It just means a warning. And all you have to know is treyasar. As a sentence, by the way, that's great. All you have to know is treyasar. Okay, if we all did. Sefer Yoel, so Rashi goes over it. At one point in my life, I learned it. So the... unfortunately, it was a while ago. Sefer Yoel, short Sefer and Treyasar for Prakim. First two Prakim are all locusts invading Eretz Yisrael as a punishment for the behavior of the people living in Eretz Yisrael. So we're quoting now from the second parak, Vayikaneh Hashem le'artso. In the context, Rashi goes through it. It basically means a warning was issued. That's all it means. The word Vayikaneh. So here, Kino, it could just simply be, with no negative connotation, a warning. The husband says to his wife, look, it's not good, this kind of behavior is not good. It's not going to promote peace between me and you. I'm issuing a warning. But it doesn't mean anger, it doesn't mean jealousy. In this context, it just means a warning. The Gemara teaches us a braisa. Rabbi Meir says that a person violates a sin in private, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu publicly proclaims it to others. Shenamar va'avar alav ruach kina. The pasuk says va'avar alav ruach kina. Pasuk apart from Parshat Sota. Ein avera lashon hachraza. The word avera in this context means a proclamation, an announcement. Shenamar v'yitzav Moshe v'yavir kol bach machaneh. Another pasuk that teaches us that the word vayavor, avera, just simply means a proclamation, an announcement. Okay, what is this doing over here? What's this? What's the Gemara's point? It's supportive of the previous point. The Gemara says Rashi, because she's misbehaving. She is secretly meeting with other men. Again, we don't know if there's actual adultery. If we did, there's nothing to talk about. But she's secretly going meeting with other men. That's the avera b'seiser. And then the gilui, the fact that other people know, must be that this Bryce is of the opinion that a warning is issued. People know about the warning. I'm guessing, the Gemara doesn't say this, but I'm guessing that Rebbe Meir must be of the opinion that the warning has to be issued in front of two. Therefore, everyone knows about it. And so, even though she's sitting privately, but it's revealed to all. I heard a pshat and the point of that is what exactly? So I heard a good pshat that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to make sure that we have a better sense of fairness in this world. Meaning, if we see someone get punished, and to the general public, person's behavior very well, so then it causes us to question. But if we know, if people know that, you know, this is what they did and that was what they did, so then it helps us better understand how Kadosh Baruch Hu operates in this world. Okay.
Are you saying that he's not supposed to issue a warning, but he can ask it?
There are two sides to that issue. In other words, the Gemara says, Reish Lakish, Abaye are of the opinion he shouldn't. And the Gemara, without giving attribution, says that no, there's another side that he should. So on this issue, it's the Gemara brings down a debate. Reish Lakish gives us another rule, another basic life rule. A person does not violate an avera unless ruach shtus, unless silliness, a late son is like an immaturity, if you will, leaps into a person. Shenamar ish ish ki sishte ishto. Now ki sishte ishto. Right, the Torah is pronounced. The Torah is written with a shin, but without punctuation. It can go either with a shin or as a sin. So, like I just made the mistake, it should be read ki sishte ishto from the word sota. But also, it could also be read tishteksiv. It could also be read as a form of shota, silliness, foolishness. Tana de be Rabbi Shmuel, mei mahem in a Torah, eid echad besota. Why is it that the Torah believes Eidecha as it relates to Sota? Another point that we said yesterday, I didn't go over in the introduction, and that is that by Sota you have a unique phenomena that you do not have elsewhere in Halacha. Although yesterday we touched on the issue of Aguna, it could be that Aguna as well, we have this issue. But by Sota, however, certainly Min HaTorah, this idea that one witness is believed. Now, what is that a reference to? So you remember yesterday's daf. Let's go over it again right now. And that is that when it comes to Sota, after having been issued a warning and she secludes herself with a man, if one witness sees the act of adultery between her and this man, she is now an adulteress. A Sota Vadai. No longer a Sota Suffolk. And at that point in time, she no longer has the right to drink the May Sota, and she will be forever forbidden to her husband and to the Baal and to the Truma, all because one witness saw. Now in Halacha, one witness is never enough. Almost never enough. In the world of Sota, after Kinui and after Stira, one witness is going to be enough. So the Gemara just notes, why should that be? So yesterday's answer to the question of why should that be is because we had drushas. Meaning, we quoted Pesukim, Eidein Ba, there are no two witnesses, but there's one witness. So yesterday's answer was there are drushas. What's today's answer? Although, the Gemara quoted this yesterday, so I'm being a little... Okay. Anyway, so, Mibnei Mahayim, Mina Torah, Eidecha, Besota, Shereg, Laim, Ledavar. So today's answer is, it also is intuitive. Because, basically, it's the accumulation of evidence. Let's go over. She was issued a warning by the husband. Step one. She secluded herself with that man that she was warned not to be with. Step two. Now you have a preponderance of evidence. Now one witness sees the act of adultery. Okay. So the raglav davar. So basically, when you put that on top of the kinui and on top of the stira, so the Gemara gives an explanation. That's why one witness is believed. Shari kinulav and nistra ve'eda chad meida sheitameya. Okay. Amle rapapala bai vaki ksiva kinui baser stira v'tumo udiksiva. The Gemara asks a question. We could have asked this question yesterday already, but the Gemara asks a question. You know, the warning that's mentioned in the Torah comes after the stira and after the tumah. And we know that in terms of the order, in terms of procedure, that obviously is not true. Meaning, obviously, first you're going to issue a warning, and then after you warned her, then she secluded, and then she may or may not have committed adultery. Why does the Torah place the word kinui after the stira? Amalei v'avar, kvar avar. So the Gemara says, yeah, but if you look carefully at the pasuk says v'avar alav, meaning it happened already. Meaning, even though the order of the Pesukim are, Kinui is placed after the Stira and after the Tuma, but in terms of when it happened, it actually happened beforehand, and that's indicated by the word Ve'avar. Kvar Avar, it already happened. Elameyatav Avar Lachem Kol Chalutz Hachanami. So the Gemara says, yeah, I'll show you another Ve'avar, and clearly that can be talking about, and it happened already. Right? We have the two Shvatim of Shevet Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe, who wanted the east side of the Yarden, and they said to Moshe, "Let's stay here." Moshe says, "Let's make a deal. You'll come with us. You'll fight with us. You'll conquer Eretz Yisrael with us, and then you will get the Aver HaYarden." So there, Va'avar Lachem Kol Chalutz. So clearly, Va'avar means, and it hasn't happened yet, because that was the deal that Moshe made. You're first going to come in, and then afterwards. So Va'avar over there cannot be understood as it already happened. The Gemara says, yeah, but contextual clues. Look, over there, by the deliberation, by the negotiation between Moshe and the 2.5 Shvatim, so the Torah couldn't be any clearer. You're going to conquer, and afterwards you're going to go. So mashma de la haba. So clearly, when they talked about settling the Aver HaYarden, they're clearly talking about after you conquer. The context couldn't be any clearer. Elahachi zagadachi kedeksivit. But over here by the parsha of Sota, do you really think that there's any benefit for warning her after the stira and after the possible tuma? V'avar basa tuma v'stira, doesn't make any sense. Why would you warn her after Stira? So in other words, the context of the parsha just simply tells you that here in Sota, Va'avar means, and the warning was already issued. The Gemara quotes another brisa. According to Rabbi Yishmael, a person warns his wife, but only after a spirit has entered into him. So he was moved by some force to warn his wife. Is that a good force or is that a bad force? So again, I know it sounds like we've already heard this debate earlier in the daf. We'll get to hear it again, just in a slightly different context. Okay, it's pshan the pasuk. The Torah says that a ruach kina entered into the husband, and as a result of that, he warned his wife. What kind of ruach are we talking about? My ruach, Rabban Ami ruach tuma, Rav Ashi Ami ruach tahara. Okay, so to which the Gemara says, you can argue in one of two ways. Ruach tuma, ruach tahara. Umistabra, kamanda ama ruach tahara. Although, interesting, the Gemara tips its cap to one side. It makes more sense, says the Gemara, that it's ruach tahara, not ruach tuma. Detanya v'kine zishto rishus, divere rishuma, Rabbi Kiva amar chova. Here the Gemara brings down a very classic machlokas as to whether or not, when a husband is issuing a warning to his wife, is it that the Torah allows him to do it, or is that there's an actual mitzvah being fulfilled when he does it? Machlokis, Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Shmuel is of the opinion that's a reshus. The Torah grants permission for the husband to do so. Rabbi Akiva says, chova, it's an obligation, it's a mitzvah. One of the 613. I'll come back to that point in just a moment. One of the 613. But the Gemara says, look, even though we have a debate here between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva, when all said and done, Iyamad Bishlam Ruach Tahara Shapir. If you can envision that the ruach that enters into the husband is a ruach tahara, good. Either you're fulfilling an obligation like Rabbi Akiva, or the Torah is granting you permission. But if the Torah is granting you permission, you can't call that bad. Ela Iyamad Ruach Tuma Rishus V'Chova Le'iyule Le'inish Ruach Tuma B'Nafshei. But can you imagine? Whichever side of this machlokas you fall on, either Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Akiva, it can't be that the Torah is promoting Ruach Tuma. A person should not allow Ruach Tuma to enter himself. So the Gemara says, like, it sounds much more mistaber. It's more logical to envision that the Ruach that we're talking about is Ruach Tahara, not Ruach Tuma.
How could it be against control?
Yeah, so I'll just reverse the question. Meaning, I thought of it, but it certainly sounds like from the Gemara's punchline that it's within his control. Meaning,
Hashem is going to be in Gitana.
Correct, but I'm with you. I hear you. But just of course, the last line of the Gemara again. Gemara says, "Chova liyuli leinish ruach tuma benafshei." So I'm sorry, right? Imaruach tuma rishus v'chova liyuli leinish ruach tuma benafshei. A person shouldn't allow the ruach tuma to enter himself. It certainly sounds like from the Gemara, it's within his control.
One of the
613. I'll get to that. V'kine isishto gufa. Sorry. Okay. We're going to now go back to this machlokas. We're going to have, this is an interesting Gemara coming up. I mean, they all are, but we're going to now have a machlokas, Rabbi Kiva and Bishmal, basically three times over, where either an action in the Torah is just an allowance the Torah gives, which we call a reshus, or it's a chova, or it's actual imperative. And three areas in the Torah, one we already know about, two we probably already know about as well, but we're going to string all three of them together. Gufa v'kini zishto rishus divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Kiva amar chova. Okay, so issue number one, the warning from the husband to his wife not to seclude herself with that man. Is that a rishus or is it a chova? Is it allowance from the Torah or is it imperative of the Torah? So it's a machlokas. And by the way, it's going to be consistent. Rabbi Shmuel is always going to take the side of rishus. Rabbi Kiva is always going to take the side of chova on these three issues. Issue number two, la yitama. Rachman Lassan, a Cohen loses his wife. So even though in general he cannot go to the cemetery, he cannot expose himself to Tumas Meis, however, for his wife, as one of the Shiva Krovim, he can. And he can meaning he's permitted to do so. He can meaning he's obligated to do so. Once again, the machlokas. So Rishus, Divrei Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva Amar Chova. So that's our second machlokas, where it's either Rishus or Chova. La Olam Bahem Tavodu. And the third issue, you own an Eved Kenani. The Torah says he works for you la'olam. He works for you forever, meaning that there is either permission or an imperative that you got to keep your Eved Kenani. So la'olam em tavod reshus de Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Kiva Omer Chova. So once again, machlokes between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva, and the sides remain consistent. Rabbi Shmuel says it's an allowance to keep them forever, and Rabbi Kiva says it's an imperative to do so. Okay. Three issues where we have a machlokas. Take a look at the very top Tosfos on the Amud. Top Tosfos on the Amud is bothered by the 613 dilemma. 613, the dilemma, there are 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. We know this because of a Gemara in Makos. Gemara in Makos says, Torah Tziv Alan Moshe, Marosha Kilos Yaakov. Moshe gave us Torah. Torah in Gematria is 611. And then there are two more mitzvahs, which Moshe didn't give us, but came directly to us from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And those are the first of the two Dibras. Anochi Hashem, Lo Yelecha. So, there are 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. So it is a little bit strange, Tosos notes, that over here, this machlok is between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel. So either, you can go either way on this, either Rabbi Kiva has 616, right? Or Rabbi Shmuel has 610, right? Could argue either way. But, in other words, it certainly sounds like 613 is not an absolute. You see the top Tosos? Tamil Rabbi Vichiles Lehada Amar Bishlam Sechas Makos, Shesh Mosri Gimel Mitzvos, Nemel Moshe, Messina Vichil Rabbi Shmuel, Damar Vishus, Bartholohu, or Rabbi Kiva Tafilohu. Okay. So, and Tosos makes an attempt to resolve this dilemma. In the, I was just doing this yesterday with Rabbi Shabtai. You know, according to the Ramban, the Rambam counts 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. The Gemara, just one word of intro. The Gemara, after telling us there's 613 mitzvahs in the Torah, the Gemara never attempts to count them. Meaning, from the Gemara standpoint, it's a number. Now let's move on. Now let's just go through the mitzvahs in the Torah. Because really, what would be the point of counting them? And then for the next about 500 years after the Gemara finished, so nobody bothered counting them. And then by the end of the Gaonim, the beginning of the Rishonim, so then this movement started of, let's actually count the mitzvahs in the Torah. So, and the Rambam, most famously, counts the 600, actually most famously probably goes to the Sefer Chinuch. But the Rambam famously counts the 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. So the Ramban, who lived after the Rambam, so in the beginning, he's Masig, he comments and criticizes several of the mitzvos, a handful of mitzvos that the Rambam counted, which he feels that the Rambam shouldn't have counted, and also glaring omissions. Okay, we just had this past Shabbos. We just had Rabbi Gottlieb come. He spoke the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, a glaring omission of the Rambam. So how do you with the? It's not one of the mitzvahs in the Torah. Ramban on that is Masig. He it's a glaring omission. Anyway. So the Ramban in his introduction to the Hasagos, so he notes, yeah, it's fine. Serves me no purpose anyway. So the Ramban is in his commentary. So he notes, you know, 613 is not meaning. I'll go through this exercise as well. I'll also count the 613, but even that meaning the idea that everyone is born on the idea that there's 613 and there's no other way to count the number of mitzvahs in the Torah. The Ramban says, I don't even know if that's like a hard rule that there has to be 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. Anyway, but when all said and done, he also goes through the exercise of counting 613. But okay, back to our Gemara. We are towards the bottom of Gemamad Aleph. We had just finished going through three areas in the Torah where Rabbi Kiva says it's a mitzvah, Rabbi Shmuel says it's a reshus, and now the Gemara is going to sit on this for a little bit. We are up to, we're two-thirds towards the bottom. Amar le Rav Papa l'Abaye. V'amar le Rav Mishar shel Rava. Le Mar Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva, v'chol ha-Torah kula hachi pligi, t'amar mar reshus v'mar mar chova. I'm not following. The Gemara says, why don't we just simply say that this is a consistent machlokus between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yishmael, where Rabbi Yishmael says it's all a reshus and Rabbi Kiva says it's all a mitzvah. Okay, even on this suggestion of the Gemara, it's a suggestion. Rashi says we're only talking about the assays. We're not talking...
We'll discuss it. One would say...
I know. But this suggestion is only for the mitzvah saseh, it's not for the low saseh. But again, the Gemara immediately is going to reject. Amalei hacha b'kray pligi. So no. These three are the exception. Meaning by all of the mitzvahs in the Torah, they're chova, they're obligations. They're not suggestions, they're not permission, it's their obligations. These three areas is what they're debating, and it's localized because of the psukim in these three areas. And the Gemara is going to go through all three. Okay, so let's start off number one, sota. and the issuance of a warning. My time, the Rabbi Shmuel Savalaki, I tana the Tanya Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov Amar Kapishamar Torah Lo Sisna Sechicha Bavavecha. The Torah says you're not allowed to have any type of hate for your brother in your heart. Yachol Kegonzu. So here's an example: your wife's not in line; she is going out and socializing with other men, and Tamalamar Vavar Lavruchi Navi Kines Yishto. So, in order to avoid that, you issue a warning. The warning's there so that you're not in violation of Lo Sisna, so that you don't come to hate. Oh, so right. So that's right. It's not an obligation, although again, I guess you could argue this as well. But it's not an obligation. It's just there to remove the sinner. Rabbi Kiva kinu achrinaksiv, and Rabbi Kiva says, yeah, but it says kina a second time in the Torah. So, meaning Rabbi Kiva will argue, I agree with you. But then why does the Torah then repeat and say v'kine? It must mean that's an obligation. So Rabbi Yishmael says, the repetition doesn't bother me. Because, and the Gemara is going to say this three times over, according to Rabbi Yishmael, the Torah sometimes repeats itself. Maybe a whole repetition just to make one singular point. But repetition doesn't bother me. And consistent, like the Tan Debei Rav Yishmael, Tan Debei Rav Yishmael, Koparsha Shenemar Benishneis, Lo Nishneis Ela Bishvil Davish Nischadesh Ba. Okay. Torah repeats itself, maybe just to make one singular point. So the fact that the Torah says Vikinei twice, Rav Yishmael says, and so what? Meaning, I'm fine with that. La Yitama, issue number two. Cohen becomes Tame for his wife. It's either permission or it's a mitzvah. Now, if you're wondering, which you really should be, what's the difference? Meaning, aside from the fact that, you know, he's fulfilling a mitzvah as opposed to it's an allowance. But moreover, what's a nafkamina? So Tosfos on the bottom points out the osek b'mitzvah. Right? We have a general rule that if you're involved in one mitzvah, you're exempt from doing other mitzvahs. Oh. So, right? Very good. So if what the Kohen is doing by burying his wife is a mitzvah, osik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. If what the Kohen is doing is just an allowance, it's just a reshus, he's not currently osik b'mitzvah. If there's another mitzvah opportunity that comes up now, and this can be done by somebody else, because if it can't, then there's a mace mitzvah. And this can be done by somebody else, so then he goes and he does the other mitzvah. Okay. I know I'm looking at it very clinically. We're talking about his wife who departed. I understand that, but okay, that's my job as, you know, learning Gemara. So So La Yitama Rishus, Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Kiva Merchova. My time is the Rabbi Yishmael. And again, the Gemara's point right now is that this is a localized machlokes to Cohen and his ability to be mitame for his family members, and this is not a general mitzvos discussion. And how do I know that? Because the Gemara starts off with the Rabbi Shmuel. The Torah says, "Amor laKohenim b'nei Aaron v'amarta lehem lanefesh leitama be'amav." It's derech lemichtav la yitama. So the Torah says right after the Torah says to the Kohen, "You can't become tame." The Torah says, "Oh, you know, but for your wife and other family members, you're allowed to." It's not a chova, it's permission granted. Rabbi Kiva, mechi im lisha'eiro nafka. Now, as far as Rabbi Kiva is concerned, I have a pasuk that already covers that. Ki im lisha'eiro. So then, la yitama lamali. So why do I have la yitama lechova? It must be that the la yitama right now is as an obligation. Rabbi Shmuel, la mitama ve mitama le'eiro. No, Rabbi Shmuel will say that the la yitama is coming to teach me another halacha. A halacha, actually, that we covered back in Masech the Nazir, not that long ago. The allowance of a coin to be mitame for his wife or for any family member is only when the body's intact. If the body is missing a limb, so then there's no longer an allowance for a kohen to be mitame. Why that should be? That's gzeres hakasuv. I don't have a good rationale. V'Rabbi Akiva imken lichter rechman Allah v'lishtok yitama lamali. So Rabbi Akiva says, if that's the only thing the Torah wanted to teach us, Torah could have gotten away with just simply saying the word la. The additional yitama, that's teaching us an imperative, a chova. So shma mina, Rabbi Shmuel, I did the kasav la nami yitama. And Rabbi Shmuel says, well, you're right. And it seems a little extraneous, but Rabbi Shmuel is going to say, and I'm okay with that. The Chedetan Debei Rabbi Shmuel, the Gemara now is going to say this a second time. The Tan Debei Rabbi Shmuel, Koparsha Shenemar, Benishneis, Lo Nishneis, Ela Bishvil, Davish, and Ischadesh Ba. Okay, a little repetition for Rabbi Shmuel is not so bad. Sometimes a whole pasuk, in this case a phrase, is repeated just to make one singular point. La Olam Behem Tavodu. Here we go, the third machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer, and that, I'm sorry, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel, and that is your Eved Kanani. You own an Eved Kanani, you're born an Eved Kanani, so the Torah says that you should own him la'olam, you should own him forever, and you should not release him. Rishus de Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva, Armachovan, again, a debate between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva, whether it's permission or whether it's an imperative. So my time at Rabbi Shmuel, so once again, it's a localized debate. And what I keep saying localized, by the way, and these three areas, it's localized. Okay, it's a localized debate. Rabbi Shmuel, I did diksiv lo sechai kol neshama, because according to Rabbi Shmuel, again, we're, the starting point is you have somebody who is a native to Canaan, what we would refer to as a Canaani. So the Torah is very clear, lo sechai kol neshama. So that there has to be eradication. So it's derech nami lemechtav lo lamam tavodu lemishrei echa mikol haomos shebal kananis v'holim mimenu ben she'atavrisho leknoso. So if the starting point is that you have to eradicate, so then the Torah has to grant allowance. What's the allowance granted? If some other member of some other nationality from outside of Canaan were to come into Canaan and father a child, that child is not considered an official Canaani, because by Umas HaOlam follows the father, that child is not a Canaani, and therefore you can keep that person. Okay, right. We're talking about avdus. We're talking about ownership. You can keep him. And here the Brisa just speaks this point out. Somebody from outside of Canaan comes into Eretz Canaan. Obviously, right? Not Jew. In other words, but someone from another nationality comes in and fathers a child. Torah says that's who you're allowed to purchase as an Eved Kanani. Let's go the other direction. Let's say that a man from Canaan goes outside of Canaan and fathers a child. So the difference between being born in this country versus between living in this country. To really understand this a little bit better, you should just know that in general the practice is that the women were stationary, and the men were the ones who were traveling in order to marry. So the people who were born in Canaan, so that means that the women were here and the men come from outside. The people living in Canaan, meaning that it's their mothers are from a different nationality, and their fathers are from here. Fine. V'Rabbi Akiva mehem tiknu nafka. So Rabbi Akiva says, I agree, but I already have all that down from the word mayhem. Mayhem means from some of them, not from all of them. So lo'ola mem tavodu lamali. So now I've totally freed up the pasuk of lo'ola mem tavodu. What do I do with that? L'chova. So that comes to teach me an obligation, meaning that there's an obligation that once you have an Eved Kanani, so you're allowed to, not allowed to. It's a mitzvah to retain the Eved Kanani. Rabbi Shmuel b'hem v'lo b'achichem. So Rabbi Shmuel says, no, I need the word b'hem. B'hem is coming to teach me them and not your brothers. Rabbi Akiva ba'achichem istefet dekor nafka. Rabbi Akiva says, I agree with you, but I have another pasuk for that. Uva'achichem b'neiso ha'ish b'achiv lo tirdeh b'fafarech. That a Jew is not allowed to own another Jew. So Rabbi Shmuel, I did ksiv ba'achichem ksiv nami b'hem. So, and as far as Rabbi Shmuel is concerned, yes, there is a little bit of repetition in the Torah, and now for the third time we get to hear this, and Rabbi Shmuel says, and I'm okay with a little bit of repetition. Lich detanya debay Rabbi Shmuel, detan debay Rabbi Shmuel, kar parsha shenam ravnishnes lanishnes ella b'shvil. Sometimes the Torah repeats an entire pasuk, but just to draw out one singular point. Okay.
In these three cases, just to go ahead and principle that when Rabbi Akiva is debating with somebody else, Rabbi Shmuel or somebody else, halacha goes that way.
Yeah, the generally speaking, Rabbi Akiva against another person, the halacha falls like Rabbi Akiva.
Okay.
That what you're saying makes sense. I did not look it up, but what you're saying makes absolute sense. If you want for homework, I can look him up and find out if the Rambam confirms what you're saying, but what you're saying makes sense. Okay, back to the Gemara.
So it's
yeah. I'm Rav Chista. We are in the middle of Gimel Amud Beis, halfway down, the four lines before the lines become wide. I'm Rav Chista. Znusa bebeisa kikari l'shum shema. Znusa in the household is it's destructive. It's like a worm in a sesame seed. I admit I don't perfectly understand the mashal over here. But basically I do understand the basic point. It destroys and it destroys from within. Yeah. Meaning that she's behaving in a way nobody knows about it. In other words, she's doing it b'seiser, but it's destructive and it destroys the house from within. Am Rav Chista tukva bevesa kikar l'shum shema, and also anger in the house. If there's excessive anger in the house, that's also a destructive force. Idibisa, the Gemara says. Now this is it's more destructive as it relates to women. Aval begaver leslamba, but the Gemara says, but it's not as destructive as it relates to men. Obviously, just state the obvious. The Gemara is obviously not condoning, but the Gemara is just simply saying that in terms of destroying a house and breaking down the family structure, it'll happen. It'll be more precipitous if done by the woman than that of the man. In the beginning, before the Jewish people sinned, the Shechina was with everyone. But once they sin, nistalku shechina mehem. That's it, the shechina left. Shenamar v'lo yirabacha ervas davar v'shav me'acharecha. So at that point in time, the shechina departs. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachman, Amar Rav Yonasan, kol ha'usa mitzvah achas b'olam hazeh, mikad maso v'holeches lefanav la'olam haba. You do a mitzvah in this world. The mitzvah will not only escort you into the world to come, but the mitzvah actually walks in front of you. It kind of heralds your arrival. That's what a mitzvah does. And shenamar v'alach lefanecha tzidkecha. Your tzidkus is going to walk in front of you. V'chol over avera achas b'olam hazeh malafafasa v'holeches lefanav liyom adin. And then avera, on the other hand, that's together with you. And the point the Gemara makes, and the Gemara makes this point often, is that obviously the mitzvah has more power than the avera. Meaning the mitzvah walks in front of you, right? It precipitates your arrival. Okay, the avera, it's with you, meaning that it's not obviously not a good it's not a good thing, but the mitzvah is like, almost like protective. The avera just kind of hangs with you. Shenama yilafto archos deracham yalubetahu viyovdu. Rav Elazar amar kshura bo kekelav. Rav Elazar is of the opinion that the avera sticks to you like a dog. Shenama v'lo shama ilah lishkav etzali yosima. So and Yosef resisted temptation lishkav etzal b'olam hazeh yosima l'olam haba, because he knew that if he did not resist the temptation and if he caved and capitulated to the temptation, so Yosef knew that the avera was going to stick to him in this world and also the olam haba. Tanan hasam shaya b'din. Oma edus arishona. This is a mishnah coming up later in the masechta. Oma edus arishona sheinos osayser olamina miskayemes bepachas mishnayim. Look in the testimony that starts the sota. So it's bad, but it's not going to create a sir olam. You can extricate yourself. She could drink the mesota, and yet how many witnesses do you need? Two. According to Rabbi Yoshua, two for both Kinu and Stira. According to Rabbi Lezer, two for one of them, but you need two. But that one witness who actually sees the tumah, who sees the act of adultery. So we could argue, obviously it's not going to be the conclusion, but we can argue you should need two. If two is needed to create a temporary isser, two is going to be needed to create a permanent isser. So tam alamar v'edein ba kosheyesh ba. So we have a drasha, meaning the argument is sound. The drasha dispels the argument. The kavacham leidus harishona, and the Gemara says, and again, let's do the same thing. We're going to make a kavachomer, but the Gemara is going to point out, but we're not going to comply with the kavachomer. Le'edus harishonim yato ma'edus harachon shasos esor olam iskayem es beid echad. If the aid at the end can be one to create a permanent iser, edus harishonim she'enos sos esor olam enedin she'iskayem beid echad. So at the front end, where it only creates a temporary iser, if one can create a permanent iser, one for sure can create a temporary iser, right? So again, tamalam ki matzah ba'ervas davar. So once again, that's a kavachomer, and it's sound logic, and the Torah dispels it. So we have a Gzeira Shavah that tells us that for the first part of the Sota you need two. So, so the Gemara says, yeah, you remember yesterday's daf? Yesterday we made the same point, but we used a different drasha. Yesterday the drasha we used is ba. Ba v'lo b'kinui, ba v'lo b'stira. And today we're using a different drasha. So, mi ba'ile hachinami kamar, tamalomer ba, ba v'lo b'kinui, ba v'lo b'stira. Okay, so the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. In other words, we do have the drasha of Baz as yesterday's daf, and without that, we would also have had a gzera shava as well. Okay, let's pause over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. That what if you have one aid, but you didn't have the preceding tumah, you didn't have the preceding stira. We'll start tomorrow with that point. The answer is going to be that one aid is not going to be enough. The one aid is only going to work only after kino and after stira. Okay. Today we covered the basic issues. Should a husband warn his wife and issue a kinui to his wife? So it's a machlokas. Machlokas in the Gemara. Is it a mitzvah or is it a reshus? Another basic machlokas. Three areas in the Torah where Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel debate whether it's a reshus or it's a mitzvah. Or basic nafkamina would be, like we learned in Tosfos, osik b'mitzvah patam in a mitzvah. Okay? And then a little bit of divrei musar hashkafa agadata regarding the destructive nature of a woman behaving in such a manner. And then we ended off today again amplifying the idea that one aid is going to be sufficient in this one unique circumstance where after kino and after stira, so one aid is going to make her an isra olam.